Hari Om Sahana Bhavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahana Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sarigaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare
Okay. Does Vrajanath, does not the Maya Shakti embody our ill fate? And is she not our enemy? If the omnipotent and omniscient Supreme Lord Sri Krishna had dissipated Maya, then would not the torment of the Jiva have been alleviated? So now you're trying it from the other side. Okay, we've made the decision, okay, so we can't get out of that. But now if God had just made it so Maya doesn't bother us, now wouldn't then it would work out really nice, right? You know, so he's really asking all the questions to try to get out of that. We have to make the endeavor, right? Raghunath Das Babaji. The Maya Shakti is the shadow of the Sarup Shakti of the Supreme Lord. Thus, she is a vitiated transformation of that purely transcendental energy. The Lord uses Maya as a tool to purify the contaminated Jiva and make him eligible for elevation. Maya Devi, the embodiment of the Maya Shakti, is a maidservant of Sri Krishna who chastises and cures the errant conditioned souls estranged from Krishna. When the Jiva, a fully spiritual energy, forgets his position as an eternal servant of Sri Krishna, he unnecessarily commits a serious blunder. As a consequence of this aberration, the Jiva is sentenced to a repeated punishment carried out by Maya Devi, who looms before the Jiva like a witch. Right. So it says here, aberration, right? It's unnecessary, right? So it's an unnecessary. So the Jiva doesn't require this, right? So many Jivas have just developed love for Krishna and been quite happy. So there's no need to have come here. But since we're here, then she deals. So this is where you get the thing of she's like a witch, because that's how the things that you do wrong, that's how she actually deals. Right? But she's doing it for our benefit. You know, so as devotees, then she deals, you know, in a slightly different way. The mood's different. But for the materialist, then, you know, he's bad, so she's bad.
Straightforward.
Right? Yeah. The material world is a prison for the errant Jiva. Just as a king builds prisons out of kindness to protect his subjects from harm, similarly, the munificent Sri Krishna has provided this material creation as a reform house for the Jivas, and Maya Devi takes the role of the prison superintendent. Now, here's another interesting just angle of it, that Krishna's kindness, Krishna's mercy. He's kind and merciful onto the pure souls who are not materialistic, so he protects them from the materialistic souls by building prisons so that all these errant souls can be in the prison. Right, but the problem is basically 98% of the prisoners or more think that they shouldn't be there. You know, they're not actually the wrong person. You know, it's something else. It's society. It's the government. It's this. It's that. It's so many things. You know, so therefore, we generally won't look at it from this angle. You know, that the pure souls are being protected from us. No, but we're thinking, no. Why are we here? Why are we suffering? Why this? Why that? You know, it's.
Same in real prisons. Same in real prisons.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I mean. Same in the prison. You know, you create a riot in the courtyard, and then you wonder why you've been, you know, locked up and lost your privileges. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just, you know, you were just being normal. Yeah. You know, it's, you know, yeah. Vrajana, if we agree that the Jiva is spiritual, how then can the chains of Maya bind or hold him in bondage, right? So now you try the other side. Mm-hmm. Okay, that didn't work. So then, if he's spiritual, then how can she actually bind him, right? Raghunath Das Babaji. Spiritual nature is absolutely beyond the circle of influence of the material nature. However, as soon as the jiva falsely claims to be the enjoyer of maya, he is enwrapped in a linga sharir based upon ahankar. Maya Devi then shackles the subtle body of the jiva with her chains. Right, the chains are the modes of nature. Mm. Right, so the spiritual is completely beyond. But we have to remember the jiva, though spiritual, is very, very small. So then, you know, it's just, he just becomes covered by this, I mean, you don't need a whole lot, you know. I mean, we wouldn't be able to, you know, yeah, like that much, you know. Okay, yeah, so, you know, it's to cover us with false ego and the subtle body. Vrajanath, why did you refer to the karma of the jiva as being anadi, beginningless? Okay, here's another. One, right?
He's so, kind of all over the place right now, isn't he?
Of course, well, that's what happens. Yeah. When it doesn't quite work, then you just go off. But these are, I mean, all of these questions, basically, I've come across, devotees ask, like that. Now, this one of being a naughty, this is the good one. People have written books on this one. Raghunath Babaji. The prime cause for all karma is the desire to execute such karma. Mm. Avidya, ignorance, right? In other words, the reason that you're bound by karma is because you want it.
Yeah.
That's all. Otherwise, if you didn't want it, you wouldn't be bound by it. Right? Avidya, ignorance, is the root of this material desire and is defined as forgetfulness of the truth. I am the eternal servitor of Krishna. When you forget that, you think, I can enjoy. So that's ignorance. Right? Because we generally think ignorance means, you know, you're really gross and stupid or something like that. You know? You know, can't read or, you know, like that kind of thing, you know? But ignorance just means you don't know the truth. The truth is Krishna. When we don't know Krishna, that's avidya. Right? Even if it's very sophisticated and very nice, it takes up a whole blackboard. You know, nobody can figure out what it means except for, you know, advanced, you know, calculus students or something. It's still avidya because there's no connection to Krishna. This avidya did not suddenly sprout out within the time span of the material universal creation. The seed of this root of karma originates in the matrix of the tathasta position of the jiva at the juncture of the material and spiritual creations. Right, so it started before. Right, so there's always the thing, well, how could one fall from the spiritual position? But you're falling because you're tathasta. If you have love for Krishna, that means you've been empowered with the chit potency, so you wouldn't fall. So if you haven't taken interest, once taken interest in enjoying maya separately, then without the support of the chit potency, being a dependent energy, then we take shelter of the external potency. Right? And so then that's where it comes. Right? That makes sense. Originates in the matrix. Okay. Since the source of the karma is thus untraceable within the mundane time of material world, karma is said to be anadi, right? Because you can say it's this long if you can trace it, but that means you have to be within the realm of time and space. But if it originated outside of the material phenomena, therefore there is no time and space. So therefore the only way to define it is it's anadi, it's beginningless. Mm-hmm. Right, because if it happened within the eternal realm, that's eternal. Therefore, something that happened there, then you don't know when it happened because there is no material time. Right, you can't say on Thursday afternoon at 4 o'clock. Then, you know, the guy made a bad choice. You know, he's been paying ever since. Right, so then in big letters, don't come to the material world. Yeah. Like that. You know. Rajanath. Okay, very simple answers, but somehow or another we love to complicate them. Rajanath. If the jiva is the central figure performing karma, and thus experiencing the fruits of elation and distress, then to what extent does Ishwara exercise control? Right, so now if we're in control of it, how much does he actually control? So are we totally in control? But if he's in control, then it shouldn't go this way.
No, exactly.
You know, like that kind of thing. Raghunath Das Babaji. The jiva is the initiator of this karma, whereas Ishvara bestows the fruits appropriate for that karma upon the jiva. In other words, the jiva starts the process, and whatever work you've done, like, he gives the appropriate result. You do good work, you get good result. You do bad work, you get bad result. So he bestows the results, and because of our attachment and our ego, therefore we enjoy or suffer. Right? Also, Ishwar arranges the resultant future karma of the jiva. Put simply, Ishwar is the disperser of the fruits of karma, and the jiva is the enjoyer of those fruits. Right? So the jiva performs the activity. He thinks he's the results are for him. So therefore, that results are given by the Lord. So it's results, it's long-term, everything like that, whatever you're going to get from that. Of course, we only look at it, I should only get the good results, the bad results. And these questions don't come up if there's no bad results. These questions all come up because there's bad results and I want to know who's responsible.
Because it's not me.
Yeah, it can't be me.
No, can't be me.
Yeah, why should it be me? Vrajanath, what are the different types of conditions experienced by the deluded souls? Raghunath Das Babaji. The spirit soul deluded by Maya passes through five distinct conditions. Achadita Chetana, covered consciousness. Shankuchita Chetana, contracted consciousness. Mukulita Chetana, budding consciousness. Vikashita Chetana, unfolded consciousness. And Purna Vikashita Chetana, full-blown consciousness. Vrajanath, which of the jivas belong to the category of Achadita Chetana? Raghunath Das. The jivas with the inert forms of trees, plants, or rocks belong to this category.
Rocks.
Yeah, no, that means there are rocks that are alive.
Mm.
Like a lot, means like mountains are alive, you know, like that. And so then, yeah. But you also have, you know, stones, jewels, different things like that. You do have them, they're alive. But like some of these big diamonds and big jewels that are really well known, many of them, they're alive. That's why there's so much sparkle and everything, because there's a living entity. Okay. Consciousness is practically non-existent in them. Having forgotten their eternal relationship as servants of Sri Krishna, they have become so completely engrossed in matter, they are now unable to perceive their spiritual self. These jivas are forced to accept and only know the six transformations of birth, growth, maintenance, production of byproducts, dwindling, and death. They are practically inert and have not the faintest recollection of their original self. This condition reflects the most degraded state of consciousness of the jiva. In the Puranas, the examples of Ahalya, the Yamal Arjuna trees, and the Saptatala Vriksha, the seven tall trees, shed more light on this topic. The jivas are put into such a distressful condition as a result of abominable offenses, and only the mercy of Sri Krishna can release them from this state. Means like means they're walking around naked, and there's sages walking by, and they're not acknowledging that. They're drunk and they're naked, and so they don't. So then you end up as a tree. That's the normal thing. You're naked, this tree. So then it just struck me now. We don't really have to, greenies don't have to worry so much about trees in the future, because there's so many people walking around with no clothes. There'll be plenty of trees. You know? No?
Yeah. You should just study the Shastra.
Yes, that's it.
Put their mind
investing in the future. Right?
Yeah, that's
you know, instead of, you know, harassing these big corporates, they should be advertising about, you know. No?
Yeah, makes sense.
I can see the slogan. Make forests, wear no clothes.
Yeah.
Gives a whole new meaning to Casual Friday.
Yeah. You know, that's just how you say, you know, think of, invest in the future, you know. Vrajanath, who are in the Shankuchita Chaitana. So that was the next step. Contracted. So the other's covered. I mean, it's just there is no consciousness. It's covered. So the next is contracted. Raghunathas Babaji. Birds, beasts, reptiles, aquatics, and insects belong to this category. And like the Achadita Chaitana, whose perception of their own consciousness is almost nil, these jivas are slightly aware of their consciousness. They carry out activities like eating, sleeping, mating, defending, moving according to their will, fighting with others when life or ownership are jeopardized, and expressing anger upon seeing injustice done to themselves. However, they do not have any knowledge of life after death or of transcendence. Right? So the other one is just birth, growth, maintenance, replication, dwindling, death. That's as far as they get. They can figure that one out. Right? But so eating, sleeping, mating, defending, you know, moving around at will, these kind of things, when something's done to them that they don't feel is right, then they feel upset, you know. Right. Like trees don't even quite figure that out. You know, so
might be the projects.
In the projects. Yeah. Yeah, actually. But notice it says upon seeing injustice done to themselves. It doesn't say to others, just to themselves. However, they do not have any, you know, unless themselves means, you know, what they identify with themselves. Huh? Yeah. Yeah. Rajanath, who are the Mukulita Chaitana? Okay, that is budding consciousness. So that's contracted. It means it's not covered, it's contracted. So it's just a little bit there. The conditioned jivas in human forms go through the higher three phases of being, namely Mukulita Chaitana, budding consciousness, Vikashita Chaitana, unfolded blossoming consciousness, and Purna Vikashita Chaitana, fully blossomed consciousness. Human being may be divided into five categories. Nitishuni, lawless, immoral. Nirishvara, Naitika, atheistic but law-abiding and moralistic. Sheshvara, Naitika, theistic and moralistic. Sadhana Bhakta, devotee of Bhagavan, whose devotion is tempered by rules and regulations. And Bhava Bhakta, pure devotee whose love and devotion to the Lord is spontaneous. Right, so these are the... So theistic, moralistic... He knows there, but I say atheistic, but law-abiding and moralistic, depending upon that degree of atheism. If it's strong, then it's not much worth it. But otherwise, if one can convince them, it's there. Right? And then niti-shunya, lawless and immoral, a little rough around the edges like that. Right? Make a good movie, but hey, you're not going to make many devotees. Right? Those human beings who, on account of a lack of knowledge or perverted knowledge, become atheists come under the category of Nitishunya or Nirishvara Naitika. Right? Lack of knowledge or perverted knowledge. Then they come into this category. Morality mixed with restricted faith in Bhagavan is the hallmark of the Sheshvara Naitika Jiva. Right? Theistic and moralistic. Morality mixed with restricted faith. It's not complete faith, it's restricted faith. You know, it means, you know, we have faith that, you know, if we go, you know, once a week, say, you know, do something nice, then, you know, he'll take care of absolutely everything for everything else that we're doing, right? You know.
Would the smartest also fit in that category?
Let's see. Yeah, could be. By levels of consciousness, probably could be. But also the theistic and moralistic depends upon theistic. They believe in higher authority, but then there's the element of Brahman, so it's not personal. So I would think that they would be more the Sheshvara Naitika, like that. You know, so it's theistic, but their idea of God is, you know, many rather than one, like that. You know, or if you say, oh no, but then they have it's one, but then it's restricted. Right? Morality mixed with restricted faith. Right? In Bhagavan. Means even there they think that, you know, he's the supreme person, this, that, but he has no form. And, you know, he has no anything. So it's restricted. They don't really understand. So they have the idea of that supreme, but generally what they're talking about more is like, it's a mixed. It means he doesn't have any form in that like Brahman. He's the creator and maintain and destroy the material world, you know. But at the same time as, you know, there's heaven and he has associates and the form, but at the same time as he doesn't. So it's kind of restricted. It doesn't quite... They can't make out that it's three different things, or if they say it's three different things, then they got the wrong three different things. Yes?
Is it falling Anandamaya into Anandamaya?
No, because with the devotee, then that's Anandamaya. You know what I'm saying? So only the first three you're actually counting within those. Or because the theistic, moralistic, then could be dharma and moksha, right? But at the same time as, you know, they can be, it could be also pranamoy. It's just, it depends. So this is just looking at the level of consciousness from the way of developing. But it might have that element. But here is that devotees are anandamoy. Yeah, I mean, technically even... A Brahmavadi is on Anandamoy, but it's only the level of Anandamoy of Brahman, you know, or the happiness that the yogi gets from meditating on the super soul. That'll be Anandamoy, if that's, you know, what do you call it, without seed, you know, it comes to there. Then it'll be Anandamoy, but it's still only up to Paramatma. So Anandamoy meaning that it's connected with Bhagavan, that's then unlimitedly greater, right? The other is unlimitedly great compared to the material world. But within the spiritual, that's just considered a drop. That's just you start there, right? And the actual point is unlimited happiness for a prema. Right. Those who strictly follow the rules of scriptures and are attracted to the devotional service of the Supreme Lord with deepening faith are sadhana bhaktas. Unlimited and spontaneous attraction and attachment to the service of the Supreme Lord are the symptoms of a bhava bhakta. Right? So this gives the... Yeah. You know, so here, lack of knowledge or perverted knowledge gives you the first two. So they may be lawless and immoral, or they may be atheistic, but law-abiding and moralistic. Right? So that's the, it's just a matter of there. It's just more sophisticated, less sophisticated. You know, more crazy or less crazy. Niti Shunya and Nirishvara Naitika, human beings have Mukulita Chaitana. Okay, Mukulita. That's the budding. Seshvara Naitika and sadhana bhakta, human beings, possess Vikshashita Chaitana, right? That means it's budding, like that. What was it? Blossoming, unfolding, blossoming consciousness. Only the bhava bhaktas are on the stage of Purna Vikshashita Chaitana. Right, so once one comes, so sadhana within that, when you come to bhava, then it's on this, you know, full blown like that, and then that's fully blossomed, and that can keep fully blossoming more and more up to Mahabhav. Right, so this, that means that's the first stage. That's where you start of 10 stages. Right, so always when you get to that point, then there's, you know, that's the end of that. But then there's, you know, so many stages move to the next one. Right, you know, like that. That's the. Does that make sense? Raghunath, how long has the bhava bhakta to remain bound by the maya shakti? Raghunath Das Babaji, this question will be dealt with in our future discussion of the seventh shloka of the Dasamul. It is now late, so let us stop for now. Fully absorbed, Raghunath recapitulated to himself all the point. Recapitulated? You recapitulate? Yeah. To go back. Oh, I see. So when somebody recapitulates, they go back to their previous. So this means he's just going over and over. Okay. Different than ruminating. Okay. But starts with an R nonetheless, right? All the points he had just heard on his way back home. Okay, part five, the liberation of the jiva from the prison house of Maya. Okay, so Daddy said he will get into in the seventh shloka. So five, so six, so that means the liberated jiva. So that should be this one. So, summary of chapter 17, Nitya Dharma, Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana, part 5, the liberation of the jiva from the prison house of Maya. Vrajanath listened impassively while his grandmother talked to him that night about completing the final arrangements for his marriage ceremony. After supper, well, because he hasn't talked about this with Babaji Maharaj yet, has he? After supper, he reclined upon his bed until late in the night, still pondering over the status of the pure jiva. At the same time, in another room, quite different thoughts were keeping his aged grandmother awake. How can I arouse his interest in his matrimonial affairs? He seems so unconcerned. She decided to request Vani Madhava, the maternal cousin of Vrajanath, who had been assigned to finalize the marriage alliance, to convince Vrajanath to marry. Okay, maternal cousin. So okay. Early the next morning, Vani Madhava showed up and got straight to the point. Dear elder brother, this is interesting. Maternal cousin. Okay, so he must be older amongst the cousins. Okay. Dear elder brother, you have spent a long time studying and teaching the Nyaya scriptures. Your father was a renowned scholar, and now you are famous as a pandit. Yet, have you considered that you are also the sole male in your household? Who will inherit these large holdings if you have no male descendant? Big brother, it is the earnest desire of everyone that you marry. Vrajanath, dear brother, why do you trouble me without cause? Since I am nowadays associating with the followers of Sri Gauranga, I have no intention of entering household life. Family life does not attract me. Having learned to experience immense exaltation in the company of the Vaishnava sadhus in Mayapur, I will either take sannyas, embracing the robe of the renunciate, or at least take full shelter at the feet of the Vaishnavas. I reveal these facts to you because I consider you a close friend and would ask you to keep them to yourself. Right? Otherwise, grandma's going to, you know, blow a jugular vein or something. You know? Yeah. Judging Vrajanath's mood, Vani Madhava thought that a straightforward approach would not favor his mission, and thus he decided to take a more devious course. Masking his inner feelings, he said slyly, I am here to assist you in anything you want. When you were a student, I carried your books to school and back. Now that you are about to take the sannyas ashram, I will carry your staff and water pot. Please open your heart to me and tell me honestly why you have developed such a strong aversion to household life, so that I will be able to defend you vigorously. Who has advised you to embrace renunciation? Vrajanath entrusted Vani Madhava candidly with the whole story of the respected elder, Raghunath Das Babaji, the mentor to whom he fled every evening, who was extremely merciful and expert in soothing and cooling the burning pangs of material existence. Being a crooked man with sinister designs, Vani Madhava conspired within himself. Now I know his weakness. I will have to make some devious maneuvers to get him back upon the right track. Yet aloud he said, Elder brother, I will gradually convince grandmother to give up her plans for your marriage, but first I must return to my house. Vani Madhava started out in the direction of his house, home, but soon turns towards Srivasangana, Mayapur. Arriving there, there he sat down under the fragrant bokal tree, saying to himself in a critical mood, these good-for-nothing Vaishnavas are the real enjoyers in this world. They live in nice surroundings with blossoming flowers, green shady bowers, and wide clean courtyards. Each has his own bhajan kutir to chant japa away from the public eye, and that is all they have to do. They live like kings, and God-fearing people, especially the pious ladies, upon the return from purificatory baths in the Ganga, always bring them fruits, milk, and so on. Such an easy life. Earlier, the caste Brahmins were able to direct this flow of bounty into their own larders by institutionalizing karmakanda performances. But the Babajis have now outwitted them and become the latest rage. Really materialistic.
Yeah,
here,
that's
no? Like that.
Pretty heavy.
My elder brother Vrajanath has begun to accept the words of these Vaishnavas. That would appear to be it. He is an unfortunate victim who has fallen into their mischievous clutches. I will set Vrajanath aright and teach these crooks in loincloths a lesson. Right? You know, it's like he's just looking at the nice thing. What about that they, you know, just not involved in anything or that? Because he's so worried about all this stuff. Mm-hmm. But they don't quite catch that one. They only see that they're getting, they live in a nice place, they do nothing, and the ladies bring them all nice stuff. So that's, you know. Vani Madhava stopped spewing out mental venom. Strolled over to one of the huts and entered. So pleasantly put, huh? By coincidence, it was the hut of the elderly Raghunath Das Babaji, who was sitting on a simple handmade mat chanting japa. The face being a mirror of the mind, Raghunath Das Babaji saw that Kali Yuga, in the form of this young Brahmin boy, had entered the hut. Very humbled by nature, Vaishnavas consider themselves at all times to be lower than a piece of straw. They tolerate the taunts of inimical persons, wishing them only the best. Though uninterested in seeking respect for themselves, they are always respectful to others. Therefore, Raghunath Das Babaji endearingly asked Vani Madhava to be seated. Vani Madhava was a deadly hater of the Vaishnavas. Because you know, he's also, because they're all the smarta line, like this. Ignorant of the status of a Vaishnava, he pompously concluded that the elderly Babaji was a Shudra and made a gesture of blessing him by showing him the palm of his hand. Raghunath Das Babaji inquired, "Son, what is your name?" Right, because he's figuring no Brahmin would ever do this, so it must be this is the religion for Shudras and this and that. So he's. Raghunath Das Babaji inquired, "Son, what is your name, and what brings you here?" In doing so, he addressed Vani Madhava with the more familiar and casual Tumi, not with the more respectful Apni. Enraged at this, Vani Madhava replied with an undignified sneer, "Hey, you Babaji, do you think that by just wearing a kopan, you are now on equal terms with the Brahmana? Apart from that, I would like to know whether or not you are acquainted with Vrajanath. Vrajanath Nyaya Panchanana." All the while, Vanamala used the familiar Tumi, right? Because you have Tumi means like for equals, Apni means for senior, and Tui means for juniors, right? So here is that, you know, he's come, he's walked into his hut, you know, he's a young man. Like this, Vrajanath is young, because he's just getting married. And then Vani Madhava is younger than him, right? So then naturally, for an elder gentleman to call such a young boy like an equal, then that is a respectful element. But he's thinking, well, he's a Shudra, and I'm a Brahmin, you know, caste Brahmin, so therefore he should use Apni with me, like that.
And it's actually quite bad to go familiar in the other direction, because he's much older.
So yeah, he's older, so he should use Apni just by age.
Yeah, yeah.
But because he feels that he's been dealt with properly, now he's dealing with that. Yeah, it's a good point. Raghunath Das Babaji, "Kindly forgive my offenses and overlook the defects in the language of an old man." Right? So, because he dealt with him, he didn't say Apni, then he can understand he's upset. Because otherwise, you'd always deal with someone older like that. "Yes, Vrajanath blesses us sometimes with his presence." Vani Madhava, "What man? That man is not as simple as you think he is. He will visit you regularly for some time to win your confidence, and then after observing your practices, carry out his own plans. The Bel Pakuriya Brahmana community is antagonistic towards you, Vaishnavas, and selected Vrajanath to come here and find out more about your way of life. You are an elderly man. You should be careful with him. I will visit you from time to time and tell you all about their devious plans against you and your friends. A note of caution for your own good. Vrajanath must not know I was here. I will take my leave now. Vani Madhava sidled off in the direction of his home. After lunch, Vani Madhava visited Vrajanath and in the course of their conversation said casually, "Elder brother, I went to Mayapur on some work this morning and unexpectedly met a very aged Vaishnava. I think he was called Raghunath Das Babaji. We exchanged a few courteous words and came to speak about you. He mentioned something so despicable about you that I was shocked. Never before I have heard anyone speak such castigating words about a Brahmana. Finally, he said that he would feed you. He would feed you with the contaminated remnants of the lower caste, thereby demote you from your brahminical position. What a shame! If a pundit like yourself is insulted, and you continue to visit him, this will blacken the good name of the entire Brahmana community." Vrajanath was shocked to hear Vani Madhava speak in this manner. Vrajanath had developed firm faith and trust in the Vaishnavas and a growing devotion to Raghunath Das Babaji. Suddenly, and for no recognizable reason, all these feelings became much stronger. Vrajanath turned to Vani Madhava, saying, "Brother, today I am busy. Tomorrow we can discuss all this at leisure. You had better go home now." Vani Madhava left quietly. Vrajanath was well aware of Vani Madhava's double-faced character, and although he had studied extensively the polemical methods of logic and rhetoric, he disliked dishonest ways. Right, so in other words, logic and rhetoric, you can use all kinds of tricks. So he knew all the tricks, but he didn't like using them. But here then, he can see his Vani Madhava, he was quite happy using them. He had revealed his intimate thoughts about accepting renunciation because of Vani Madhava's alleged willingness to assist him in entering the sannyas ashram. Nonetheless, now he understood Vani Madhava's deeper malicious motives. Furthermore, it occurred to him that Vani Madhava's scheming intrigues may have been prompted ultimately by some unexpected personal gain in the matter of his marriage. In addition, the visit to Mayapur might have been made with the intention of sowing seeds of dissension. Vrajanath clasped his hands and earnestly prayed to the Lord, "O Lord, let my faith in the Guru and the Vaishnavas become fixed and unshakable and not be reduced by the wiles of materialists and cheaters." After being absorbed in philosophical deliberations until late afternoon, at sunset, Vrajanath set out eagerly for Srivasangan. When Vrajanath came that evening, Raghunath Das Babaji encompassed and welcomed him during their greeting embrace. Considerably moved, Vrajanath fell at his feet, his eyes brimming with tears. He remained silent out of shame while Raghunath Das Babaji began, "I was visited this morning by a dark-complexioned Brahmana, youth, who made certain provocative remarks. Do you know this person?" Right, so dark complexion means that there's something not quite right. Like that, because generally speaking, Brahmin should always be light-colored. So if there's darkness like that, still they're in the Brahmin element. They may have something, but there's something not quite right. Mm-hmm. There can be a little bit of a deviousness like that. Or it can be something else, but in this case, it matches. Mm-hmm. "Dear Master, if I may repeat your own words, there are many sorts of human beings, some of whom are so perverted that they enjoy causing anxiety to others. Vani Madhava, I hesitate to add the prefix brother, is a prime example of this kind. I would prefer not to mention him anymore. His main business is to criticize you in my presence and to blame me in your company, hoping to wedge with falsities and lies a rift in our friendship. I hope you were not offended by this upstart." Raghunath Das Babaji, "O Krishna, O Gauranga, I am fortunate to have been in the service of Vaishnavas for a long time. By their mercy, I am able to judge between a Vaishnava and a non-devotee. As I have properly assessed everything that happened today, you may drop the topic. Vrajanath, all right, dear master, let us forget that fellow. Kindly tell me how the conditioned soul may attain liberation. Raghavan Das Babaji, we find the answer to this question in the seventh shloka of the Dasamula Siksha. The conditioned jiva travels high and low throughout the material universe, from one species of life to another. When he associates with a Vaishnava saint, he is saturated in the flowing rasa of devotion to Sri Hari. He gradually develops ruchi for serving the Lord and following the Vaishnava way of life. By chanting Krishna Nam, the jiva becomes purified of his material contamination. Thus, his surup begins to manifest more and more, and he gradually attains eligibility to relish the nectarious rasa of Shuddha Bhakti to Sri Krishna. Both the Mundaka Upanishad 3.1.2 and Svetasvatara Upanishad 4.7 repeat the same shloka. Although the two birds are in the same tree, the eating bird, the jiva, is fully engrossed with anxiety and moroseness as the enjoyer of the fruits of the tree. However, if in some way or other he turns to his friend, the Lord, and knows his glories, the suffering bird becomes immediately free from all anxiety. See here also, some way or another, just like some way or another he turned away. So some way or another if he turns back, like that. Vrajanath, do the words, if he turns to his friend, the Lord, and knows his glories, the suffering bird becomes immediately free from all anxieties, describe the liberation of the jiva. Raghunath Das Babaji, the termination of the jiva's captivity within maya is called mukti, which the person who associates with pure devotees is sure to attain. However, most importantly, one should consider the details of the status which the jiva attains after mukti. Right, so it's one thing he attains mukti, but it's more important to consider what is the position after mukti. Right, because mukti just means you're not involved in maya. So more important is what do you do after you're not involved in maya. Right. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.10.6 declares, mukti is the permanent situation of the living entity in his swarup, constitutional transcendental form, after giving up the changeable, gross, and subtle material bodies. Footnote 2. Oh, because this is a new book, I was thinking. We were much higher before, okay. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport to this verse, all the Vedic literatures aim at devotional service to the personality of Godhead. And as soon as one is fixed upon this point, he at once becomes liberated from conditional life. The marginal, gross, and subtle forms are simply due to the conditioned soul's ignorance. And as soon as he is fixed in devotional service of the Lord, he becomes eligible to be free from the conditioned state. Right, as soon as he becomes fixed in devotional service. Right, so then naturally then he gains, because he mentioned that the whole process of here is when he develops that taste from the association of the Vaishnavas following the process. That's when it becomes very dynamic. So when he comes to nishta, which is being fixed, then he has the qualification to get that taste. Right. This is This devotional service is transcendental attraction for the Supreme Lord on account of his being the source of all pleasing humors. Everyone is after some pleasure of humor or for enjoyment, but does not know the supreme source of all attraction. Raso vais saha rasam Yevayam labdvanadhi bhavata. That's Taittiriya Upanishad. The Vedic literature hymns inform everyone about the supreme source of all pleasure. The unlimited fountainhead of all pleasure is the personality of Godhead. And one who is fortunate enough to get this information through transcendental literatures like Srimad Bhagavatam becomes permanently liberated to occupy his proper place in the kingdom of God. So that's the point, is by hearing and associating with the Vaishnavas and practicing, one comes to that position and becomes situated in the spiritual world. So we're going from the conditioned state to situation in the spiritual world. So liberation is just, you know, kind of comes along, is, you know, part of the package deal, right? You know, it's like, you know what I'm saying? You book the room in the hotel, you will get sheets. You know, you don't have to worry about that. You know, it's not like, you know, so it's booking's not a big thing, right? Huh?
Depends where you book.
True, I didn't think about that one. Okay.
But Vaishnava is a nice hotel.
Okay. So, yeah. Should have used maybe a different example, right?
Sorry.
Okay. According to this verse, the jiva must give up the coverings that are his material bodily forms and become permanently situated in his swarup. As soon as the chains of captivity are cut, the process of mukti for the jiva ceases. Then the eternal and endless engagement of the jiva in his swarup, which is the prayojana of the jiva, begins. Right, so as soon as he's free from maya, then the whole process of mukti is over. Right, so now begins the acting in his swarup, or the element of prayojana of love of God. Now that whole process begins. This, yes.
Before nishta and anartha-nirvritti is involved there.
It means faith, association, taking up the process but may not be steady, and trying to remove the obstacles that make it unsteady.
The mind is taken out of absorption by material desires.
Yes.
But then after nishta, then it's just a matter of intensity of absorption?
It's intensity, but you have in nishtas that there may be still some desires there. But they're the more subtle ones that we were discussing this morning. So the yogi can get distracted by these things, but at this much higher level of development, right? But here it's that when he comes fixed, then things start to work in the process. So he's getting. So the point is that spiritual is working, the material automatically comes along with it. So, excuse me. So then he may get distracted by that. He has to be careful. But once you come to ruchi and you have a taste, then even that goes like that. So that's why on these kind of things, they'll always talk about nishta, because then you're fixed, and then that's the position, is you're always fixed in Krishna consciousness. So that's a constant all the way through, right? So that's the element of pure devotion, is that there's a consistency, right? But the point is that dynamic element starts with ruchi, like we were discussing before, is that it was being mentioned that the element of bhava, kind of that ecstasy is just that full intensity. So in lighter stages, that's in asakti and ruchi. So that taste and attachment, those are the beginning stages, you could say, of bhava. Does that make sense? But the qualifications, the basic qualifications of being fixed in devotional service, then that's the beginning of the whole pure devotional process. But the actual element of rasa, that starts with ruchi. Right? So it mentions his sarup becomes more and more developed. So the main sarup is that we're servant of Krishna, right? Krishna sarup hoy. Jiva sarup hoy Krishna nitya das, right? So the jiva sarup is servant of Krishna. So it's not this surup means what's my spiritual body, because the spiritual body is a manifestation of that service attitude. Right? Means that it's 54th verse of Brahma Samhita. Then it's explaining how, because the devotees, they have a particular way they want to interact, they love Krishna. Therefore they manifest a form that matches that. Right? So Mother Jashoda, then she wants to serve Krishna as the parental rasa, so she manifests that form by which it can be done. Right? The cowherd boys, they want to interact with Krishna on that level, so they have forms in which they can do that. Does that make sense? So that mood of service is the main thing, then that form is the support for that. Right? Not that this form is the, you know what I'm saying? So therefore the surup actually means the mood. Right? Yeah. The state of complete elimination of material suffering may also be called mukti. But the sublime spiritual bliss that the liberated jiva experiences by devotional activity upon the spiritual flat platform far transcends the relief felt by the cessation of material entanglement. Right? In other words, a positive activity always gives way more than just stopping a negative one. I mean, it's very nice to stop something negative is stopped. It's a relief, so it has a pleasure. But actually, doing something positive is always much better. Does that make sense? Vrajanath, is it not true that the practice and cultivation of Brahmagyan, Ashtanga Yoga, and other pious auspicious activities ultimately lead one to the attainment of devotion to Sri Hari? Raghunath Das Babaji, here are the Supreme Lord's own words from the Srimad Bhagavatam 11.12.1.2. Because he's saying, so by studying Brahmagyan, Ashtanga Yoga, and other pious things, doesn't that naturally then culminate in bhakti? Right? It's the natural next stage. Right, so they're just seeing, because the point of karma kanda is by your good work, that's what got you there. So, in other words, this is just a further good work. It's more pious. So that's why, I mean, by these pious things, it's brought you to this more pious platform. Just like the karma kanda, then in his maturity, then goes for jnana kanda. Right? Like that, he naturally progresses. So the idea is that, so that would mean that bhakti is generated by pious activities, by good karma. You know, proper knowledge and good karma, that would generate bhakti. That's the question. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "My dear Uddhava, by associating with my pure devotees, one can destroy one's attachment for all objects of material sense gratification. The devotion developed in such purifying association brings me under the control of my devotee. One may perform the Ashtanga Yoga system, engage in philosophical analysis of the elements of material nature, practice nonviolence and other ordinary principles of piety." Right? Because remember, nonviolence was the beginning of yoga. You know, and basically the whole Vedic culture. Chant the Vedas, perform penances, take to the renounced order of life, execute sacrificial performances and dig wells, plant trees, and perform other public welfare activities. Give in charity, carry out severe vows, worship the devas, chant confidential mantras, visit holy places, or accept major and minor disciplinary injunctions. But even by performing all such activities, one does not bring me under his control. Right? So it's by associating with the devotees and that devotion that develops in that association, that's what brings Krishna under his control. Right? So it's nothing else, because nothing else is going to impress Krishna, because he's the source of all those things anyway. Mm. Right? Mm. So it's not that those things. The point is that one's doing these things to please Krishna, then that's impressed. But it's the devotion. It's like that. That's done. The purport is that none of these practices is as potently spiritually in attracting the mercy of the Supreme Lord as Sadhu Sangha. The Ashtanga Yoga path and other such practices just mentioned please the Lord only superficially, unlike Sadhu Sangha, which pleases him fully. Right? It pleases means he's being pious, he's nice. So from the pious platform you could get to the, you know, take up the association of devotees, come to the transcendental platform. So it's only that technically, the pious person is supposed to associate nicely with the sadhus. But as we see how, you know, the smart Brahmins have been associating with the Vaishnavas, it's not necessarily so, because they become proud, right? So they're unable to appreciate the actual position of the Vaishnavas, because they look at everything material. The Brahmin birth, you know, the respect in society, you know, the particular material knowledge, you know, all these different things it doesn't have. So it's like this Raghunath Das Babaji, he knows the philosophy very well, but it's not necessarily that he's a logician. Right? He didn't necessarily study that. I don't think it mentioned that specifically. So if somebody's really worried about that, that's when they call in Vaishnava Das Babaji. Yeah. Because he was. Right? And so therefore he can technically get involved in all that. It's not something you would do as a choice, but if that's what it's going to take to get them to understand, then okay, it's used. Does that make sense? So the problem is here these Brahmins have many of these qualifications, but they're still atheistic. Right?
Okay.
So then it's not a very good platform.
They're very fixed in thinking themselves controllers and doers.
Yeah, well that's the problem. As we go through karma kanda, with what Jaimini gives, then Karma Mimamsa, you'll see that because it's human centered. It's not authority centered. Right? It means you follow authority and do the pious activities, but because I'm doing it, that's why it works. That's all. It's like saying your mother told you to take out the garbage, so you took out the garbage, and now that's what makes the whole house work.
Yeah.
It's kind of, they don't quite catch the subtleties. Rajanath, right? You could say, so therefore you take out the garbage, so therefore your mother's happy. Because she's happy, then she does all her duties nicely.
Yeah.
So you're controlling the whole household by taking out the garbage.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's natural.
Sounds good.
Yeah. So that's how they pervert the knowledge. That's what it said before. By perverting the understanding. So that's what those first two stages do.
Mm. Yeah.
Right?
Mm. That's what we're up against.
Yes. And unfortunately, with time, more of the first instead of the second. Right?
Yeah.
Vrajanath, oh, okay. Master, you say that Sukriti brings a person into contact with the saintly soul. What is Sukriti? Is it part of karma or jnana? Raghunathas Babaji, according to the scriptures, pious auspicious activities are called Sukriti. They are of two varieties. Bhakti, pravartaka, that which invokes devotional service to the Supreme Lord, and avantara, phala, pravartaka, that which gives extraneous material results. In other words, he's saying, is it part of karma or part of jnana? He's saying, well, there's one is karma or jnana, and the other is bhakti. The fruitive activities in pursuit of empirical knowledge in the Shankya philosophy are examples of Sukriti producing extraneous results. Yet saintly associations, spiritually enlivening pilgrimages, observing devotional vows, and so on, are bhakti pravartaka and generate eternal devotion to Sri Krishna. On the other hand, avantara phala pravartika sukriti gives temporary material results and then exhausts its effect. It means bhakti, it gives an effect, but it's eternal. Anything done, because it's on the eternal platform, so it can't run out. Right?
Yeah.
But material, because you've had to perform that activity to get it, it's being produced within the material, so that power of what you've done to produce it is how long it lasts in the temporary. While the other one, it's being done on the eternal platform, it lasts on the eternal platform. The other's done on the temporary platform, it lasts temporarily. Vrajanath, if a person who is afflicted by the pangs of material existence and is thus desirous to end his sufferings, which is caused by nescience, directly and earnestly approaches the shelter of the lotus feet of Sri Hari in order to surrender himself, will he not be awarded with bhakti? Raghunath Das Babaji, by his power of discrimination, a person may become conscious of the distress inflicted upon him by Maya Devi and comprehend that material life is unreal and contaminating. However, only upon realizing that the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord and his unalloyed devotees are his soul sanctuaries, and then single-mindedly endeavoring to surrender to the Lord through the medium of his pure devotees, will the sincere soul properly realize the protective association of sadhus engrossed in Krishna prema. This sublime sadhu sangha then bestows the prime devotional sukriti, giving the aspirant the greatest blessing, the attainment of the lotus feet of Sri Hari. Right? So it's not by just turning to the Lord, because that's what he said. So the sincere soul, he has afflicted by the pangs of material existence. So then he goes to the Lord, and therefore directly and very earnestly approaches the Lord and tries to get his blessings. So and surrenders to the Lord. So will that give bhakti? But he's pointing out it's actually only in the association of devotees that will give bhakti. So in other words, if you're sincere, the Lord will send the devotee. Mm-hmm. Then that association, that's what will give you bhakti. But you don't get bhakti by approaching the Lord. You get bhakti by approaching the devotee of the Lord. All right? But if you're sincere in approaching the Lord, then he'll send the devotee. The jiva's initial mood of renunciation and state of awakening consciousness play an indirect, secondary role as stepping stones towards the ultimate devotional goal. However, sadhu sangha is an indispensable need and is thus the principal means to attain Shuddha Bhakti at the lotus feet of Sri Krishna. Right? The other stepping stones, because they bring you close, you have knowledge, you have detachment, so you're not so attached to the material world. You know, you're willing to live a lifestyle that's not so absorbed in material fruitive element. So it's useful, but it's only useful if you come in contact with the pure devotees. Otherwise, then that usefulness means it'll be there for a while, and after a while you get tired of that, and then you'll turn back to, you know, grosser materialism. Right, it'll just, yeah, keep going around and around. Does that make sense? Right? So that it just goes back and forth. Right? You materially engross yourself, then you find that it's not giving what you're looking for, you renounce, you get bored of that, you go back to the sense gratitude, just back and forth. So it's only when you take up associating with devotees. So an indispensable need means it has to be there. So that means it's an attachment, it's a goal. It's not something that, you know, you utilize. It's not, sadhu sangha is not part of the field of activities. Sadhu sangha is actually the goal, because it's in the association of the devotees that we serve Krishna. Right? It's not just us and Krishna. It's we're assisting the devotees in serving Krishna.
So it's prayotan.
Yes. So it's a need.
Yeah.
Like that. So that's indispensable. And so that becomes the principal means. It becomes the main abhideya to get the lotus feet of the Lord. So in other words, when surrendering to the lotus feet and have the association of the devotees is your goal, that's what you have to have, then that itself becomes the process by which you get the lotus feet of the Lord.
And it becomes moved back to Sambandha, so it's all three?
Yeah, it means, of course, that's the situation in which you always have that desire to be in the association. So it's constantly going on. So in that association, you're still desiring that situation. Yeah. And then that brings you closer to the Lord. Because it's the devotion to the devotees that attracts the Lord. Why? Because something common is what makes for friendship. So the Lord's attracted by the devotees. So if you're attracted by the devotees, that's the common ground. Right? Now you interact based on those common qualities, those common 50 qualities. Therefore, you can express that. But the common point is the service to Vaishnavas. That's the point. Krishna's serving Vaishnavas, you serve Vaishnavas, and you naturally have a relationship. Right? It means he's the Lord, right? And that he has that attraction to the Vaishnavas, and we're a dependent energy that becomes dependent upon the higher internal potency. Right? So in other words, the focal point is the devotee. Right? Does that make sense? That gives the Lord, yes.
Maharaj, can this adhikar is with a limited ability to distinguish devotee from non-devotee?
Yes. That's why it's slow. It means technically being a neophyte doesn't have to take that long, as we see by some of these personalities, it doesn't take that long. You know, Vaishnav Das we see was the quickest. Yeah. Because he had studied everything, knew everything, he was the top of all that you could get in that kind of thing. He could just see this is not, you know, or like Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. You know, Lahiri Babu is, you know, he knows something. He's not seemingly as much as Brajanath. But, you know, he's quite well renowned and quite well situated. But at the same time, as that took him, you know, a few years to be nicely situated. But still, it was dynamic. A few years is not bad. You know, and here then he's asking so many questions that Vaishnava Das Lahiri didn't have. Right? They moved more quickly through that element. But he has so many more doubts and everything. But he's moving nicely, dynamically. So it's just a matter up to the individual. One can move through the neophyte platform very quickly, or it can be very, very long. Just depending upon your that faith in Krishna and that willingness to endeavor for pure devotion in the association of devotees. So if devotees become important to you, you advance quicker. If devotees aren't so important, you don't advance so quick. You know, so it means, in other words, the sadhana is there because that's the practice. That's how you see that I am regularly engaged in the devotional process and I'm regularly purifying myself of material contamination and doing those practices that make me more aware of and interested in Krishna. But it's the association of devotees that makes the process dynamic. It's not that, if association of devotees, then we don't have to do the sadhana. But what are you going to do in the association of devotees? It's sadhana. Right? So the point is that's what makes it work. You know what I'm saying? It's just like if the machine works because of electricity, it's not, the electricity is important, so we'll just have electricity. We don't need the machine. No, the machine but it's powered by sadhu sangha. So the devotional process is powered by sadhu sangha. And that's what attracts Krishna. Therefore, then Krishna blesses one with his service. Is that okay?
But on the other hand, when you see a management which is based on enhancing the chanting and the sadhusanga, it gets very dynamic.
Yes, it becomes very dynamic. Because the whole point is you're supposed to be managing what's important, right? You don't management isn't just for management's sake. You manage something that's important. Like, let's say, eating is important. So you manage to get groceries and get this and that and arrange the time and have the utensils and all that. And, you know, so you're managing that. That's what's important. It's not the management's important. But if you think management itself is what's important, then one's fallen prey to thinking one's conditioning is actually what's important. Rather than engaging your... like that. It's a matter of the conditioning itself is important. Like that. So the point is that the managing doesn't end up with hearing and chanting, then what's the use of it? Right? In other words, if you manage a temple, you have this fabulous temple, but no one hearing and chanting, what's the meaning? Right? That's the whole point. So the idea is that you're creating, managing the facilities for hearing and chanting. But you have to know that that's the main thing. Otherwise, the management takes precedent, so then people aren't satisfied, so they don't absorb themselves in hearing and chanting. Right? But if hearing and chanting is the main thing, then that's what increases.
In his attitude, he's waiting for Raghunath.
Sorry?
Raghunath does, but he's waiting. That attitude is very interesting to see. He's anxious for that.
Yes. Because the whole point is devotee is devotee, so you're happy to interact with devotees. The point is nicely interacting with devotees is what pleases Krishna. But it's not the niceness that pleases Krishna, it's the actual sincerity, the value of position of Vaishnavas. Does that make sense? So it's not that you dealt with Vaishnavas properly, that's why Krishna's pleased. That you value devotees, that's why you dealt nicely with them. That's what Krishna is.
Yes.
Otherwise, then again, it just comes back to theistic moralism.
Yeah.
Right? You know, it's just you're being good.
Yeah.
Right? Like that. Okay. Vrajanath, who placed karma, jnana, and vairagya, and viveka, as the secondary causes for bhakti, why do we not call them bhakti, pravartaka, sukriti? Raghunath Das Babaji. We have strong reservations against accepting this opinion. The results of these secondary causes are extraneous to the real goal, right? So he's saying karma, jnana, vairagya, and viveka, these can be stepping stones. But it's not that they're direct stepping stones, right? It's just that it brings you to the point where you may be interested. But the point is the soul can be interested at any time. Right? It just depends upon the situation. Right? So we see that the most powerful is when one has the association of devotees. Right? One can say is that, okay, then Magrari the hunter, when he is revealed the proper knowledge is there, or that then he surrenders. But it's because he's in the association of Narad Muni. That's why he's taking it up. The knowledge just happens to be a medium through which you use it. Does that make sense? Right? People are feeding the animal, but it's not that the animal is becoming attached to the person. They're attached to the food, but not the person. But the person who uses the food as a medium for the affection, they become attached to that person. You understand? So it's not just the ritual. It's used as a medium for something higher, right? So that's the thing. Is then we confuse that. But then it's part of the thing. No, it's still separate. But if it's separate, we don't need it. No, you need it. So that's the thing. It's secondary, but it's used. But it's still never primary. It's never the direct reasons. Most often, the results of these secondary causes are extraneous to the real goal, most often becoming redundant and ineffective after being awarded. Right? It means once you get the result, it doesn't necessarily work at that time. You work so hard and long to get it that by the time you get it, it doesn't actually have any meaning anymore. By the time the guy's actually, worked hard at the company, put in his time, missed all his weekends and vacations and time with his family, moved up, gotten his position, now that he has the money, he has the position, now he can buy that house he's always wanted to get for the family. By that time, it's redundant. Nobody cares anymore. Right? Does that make sense?
The kids have moved out.
Yeah, the kids have moved out, the wife's moved out. It's everything like that, So that's the problem with most of these things. By the time you get them, then they don't really have that same position anymore. Okay, so we'll end here. The covering potency. So you don't see the position one's been thrown to. So you think everything's going great. Mm. Nobody else really thinks that. But somehow or another you do.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jainitai Gaura Premanandi. Do we understand why we're chanting the Om in front of the Hare Krishna?
Yeah.
Not that the Om requires Hare Krishna. It's just that by the Om, it makes us all chant in the same note. Otherwise, we just start everybody being a different note, and it's a bit
off.
Yes. I think cacophony is the technical term.